Hello, welcome back to Tabu. My name's Katrina Heinle. I'm joined by Nick, Max and Alex from Stuart Clinton Property. We're doing a podcast on care homes this episode. Should we introduce ourselves, Nick?
Hello everyone, my name is Nick Russell. I'm Sales Director of Tab.
Hello, I'm Max Rayner and I'm CEO of Stuart Clinton Property. Thanks for having me on.
Alex Baker, COO of Stuart Clinton Property.
Great. Let's just have a little bit of a conversation on who you are and what you do, and tell us a bit about Stuart Clinton Property.
So yeah, we are property developers, mainly focusing on care and supported living. But it didn't start out that way. We started our business, Stuart Clinton Property, back in 2017. Now, obviously, I'm not called Stuart and Alex isn't called Clinton, so there's a bit of a backstory to that. We've been best mates since we were five, and our dad's passed away at different points in our life, and my dad was called Stuart and Alex's was called Clinton, so it only felt fitting to name the business after the two guys that sort of allowed us to get into it, really. And it obviously sounds like we've been around for 30 years and we know what we're talking about, right? Stuart Clinton, you just trust behind that, isn't there? So my dad wasn't with my mum at the time when I was 16 and he passed. So me and my sister inherited his house. And that was our sort of first property seed, if you like, because at that age we were getting a little bit of rent and just sort of learning how property works. And then we had a little bit of cash left over. So we did what I wouldn't recommend doing now, which is buy a property for cash without using mortgage or lending. So you guys wouldn't like that. On the same road. This was just a one-bed house in Hemel Hempstead in Hertfordshire. So that was me and my sister just sort of ticking for a while. No real sort of education, no real sort of... We didn't really know where it was going, but it was just a, it allowed us to just sort of sit back, process what happened to our dad and experience things in life. So I went off and became a ski instructor and lived the life of Riley for a bit, which I wouldn't have been able to afford to do. If that didn't happen. And then, so that was when I was 16. About when I was 23, unfortunately, Alex's dad passed. And Alex came to me, and he'd sort of seen the fact that I didn't go to uni, I dropped out of school, and life was okay. And sort of said, well, I want to get into property like you have. And then that was where we started going, well, you know, I've got two now, and they've doubled in value, and I've been getting rent every month, and it's great because, you know, the big sort of why for us was... Our dads died at a young age, so they didn't get to experience all the fruits that life had to offer. So our purpose starting out was we want to create a lifestyle company where if someone springs a holiday on us or we've got a wedding to go to or an event or, you know, we just want to take the day off because we're tired, we have the freedom to do that. And that's what we started doing from 2017 to the beginning of 2020. And then we actually realised that there was no passion behind what we were doing. We did a lot of student HMOs and working professional HMOs. That was our main like bread and butter. But we were solely doing it for money. Like there was no other passion behind it, just going, right, how much money can we make out of this house? How much return can we get and how much equity can we add to our net worth?
Were you managing these properties yourselves?
No, we utilised agents because it's all sort of, you know, our ethos is don't get involved if you don't have to, and time's money, and you know, if we can get someone else to do a better job than us in a local area, then we'll do that.
Mm-hmm. Our number one goal has always been growing the portfolio rather than managing the individual properties and all the little problems that come along with it.
Yeah, I mean, every time you spend on fixing internet and getting a tenant a key cut and all this stuff that comes with it, it's time taken away for searching for new deals.
Well, so. You also talk about lifestyle. It's not really, it's not conducive to lifestyle. No, if you spend your entire time like micromanaging these properties.
Exactly. Yeah. So we recommend agents to everyone, to be fair. But anyway, so, and then we were doing all these projects that were quite difficult. You know, every project has its own stresses and you're learning every time. And it just didn't feel like we'd achieved anything. It was just like, oh, that was it. That was easy. Mm-hmm. And then, well, it wasn't easy, but it's like there was no sort of fulfillment coming out of it. And then we started to look, lockdown happened, and we started to really look at the care industry as a whole. We liked it anyway because we've experienced, it's fair to say, we've experienced our fair share of issues from losing our dads at a young age. And all of a sudden, the coin dropped, and it was like, this is more than just us now. This is more than money, because we feel like we can give back to the community now, and we can help people that we can relate to, in property whilst fulfilling our dad's legacy, which is a lifestyle company to give us the freedom to do what we want. And the whole circle just felt like it was complete. So that's why we met you guys and started buying care homes. And we've just done two, actually. One with you guys, we've done another one on the side. Two care homes for people with mental health issues. So I think that's why we're here. We've just opened an 11 bed that we've done with you guys. And that's for adult males transitioning out of school with mental health issues. And we've just done a 6 bed that's going to go to women with mental health issues. And it feels
and a great job, Master.
Good. You've come and seen it.
Came
up like
there
it?
With Duncan. Yeah, it was great. Honestly, we thought you'd done a fantastic job.
Thank
we came
you,
with
it.
Really
it.
Impressed. You know, you'd done it within, you know, before you said you would do it. And I thought it looked great.
Brilliant. Yeah,
really good.
Our goal is really to make it a home, make it feel homely. the industry's been moving away from kind of institutional care homes that you would typically kind of imagine in your head when you hear the words care home. So, you know, you saw we go for high quality finishes, great amenities. Everything, you know, our kind of little motto is, would we live there? Mm. If we wouldn't be willing to live there, then why should somebody else? Why should...
But it was the personal space that I liked that we gave everyone. The rooms were of a good size. You know, if you're in a, you know, shared accommodation, you want to make sure that your private space is at least, you know, we don't have to swing a cat.
We take pride in that. We do, like Alex said, would we, if we had issues, would we want to live here? And we like to think that we invest ethically. Obviously, in the background, the deals need to stack. And it's not just like fairyland stuff of just spending fortunes on properties and making no money, because then we wouldn't have a business. But it's not necessary. So with Park Road, for example, that we did with you guys, I think we had, it's 11 beds, but we had an opportunity to get 12 and potentially squeeze 13 in there. But at what cost? You know, that's where we draw the line. If the investment meets our minimum criteria, we're not going to squeeze more rooms in at the expense of the tenants, because that's why we're doing it. We're doing it for the tenants.
We generally set our criteria higher than what the legislation is. So CQC, the Care Quality Commission, they generally set a room size as a minimum of 12 square metres, including an ensuite. We set our own standards of 12 square metres plus an ensuite, because particularly for mental health, the last thing you want to be in is a dark, dingy, small room with no natural light. That's only going to affect you negatively. Yeah. So we do the complete opposite: big windows, high ceilings, you know, warm colours, and bright and airy. So you know that this person, every time they're waking up in the morning, they're starting with the best start.
We don't want to be more miserable than when they
come exactly.
in. With respect.
We wouldn't be very good at our jobs, would we?
But then, but then the hope is that, you know, they stay longer.
Yeah.
Well, actually, we hope that they don't. In the mental health life skills program, we want them to recover in there and leave. But we want the care operator to be happy and stay for a long time and enjoy it. So it's a win-win all round. And that goes to say, because that's the HMO style care home type of properties. But we also look at supported living, which is apartments. And again, we try and get about 10 square metres over the national minimum standards on our apartments when we're looking for them as well. So it just helps future-proof it. And
Brilliant.
Well,
great. I guess
probably
we...
Probably dovetails very nicely into our questions.
Definitely. So it's the same format as usual on this podcast. We'll be asking the 5 questions on care homes. Your guys will be answering, and then Nick's here to help move the conversation along as well, and I'm chattering on too much like now. If we start with question one, number one then, what are the steps required for the development of a care home?
Sure. So I think it's quite a broad question, because care varies so much. What we do is mental health, but you can have learning disabilities, physical disabilities, addiction, homelessness, you know, there's such a variation. So it is very much dependent on the type of care that you are delivering. And that can kind of cause changes in an area or a property. On the area side of things, for example, if you're working with people that have had addiction problems, the last place you want to put them is smack bang in the middle of town, you know, where they've got access to drugs, alcohol, that sort of stuff right on their doorstep. A different kind of scenario would be for learning disabilities. A key thing for people with learning disabilities is incorporating them into society, finding them jobs, access to libraries, parks, that sort of stuff. So somewhere in the middle of town would be more beneficial for someone like that. So it definitely does vary. And I think on the property side as well, you're looking at, there's a lot of different adaptations that you might require for for a care home, you know, for elderly care, you might be looking at ramps, wet rooms, mm-hmm. that sort of stuff. For more kind of learning disabilities, it's really quite cool actually, the stuff that's coming out these days. So, you know, you've got your smart yeah. homes, your Google Home and your Amazon and that sort of stuff, and you can wake up in the morning and say, oh, you know, good morning, Google. And then it does your kind of morning routine. So it'll like turn Likes your lights the weather. On. Yeah, tell you the weather. And yeah, can do all sorts of different things. I think you can like turn your kettle on, all sorts of different things now. So what companies are doing is they're actually adapting that technology to work in assisted living for people that do have needs. So people that suffer or struggle with like dexterity or cognition and they can't use their hands as well. Things can be voice controlled. It's it's absolutely amazing the things that can be done. But yeah, to answer your question, there's no kind of one size fits all. Your key is finding out who you're going to be developing the care home for, what type of care the care operator delivers, and then you basically go from there.
So you need an operator ready to go, you think, beforehand, or would you design it first and then go to the operator?
You can do either way.
You don't have to. So to summarise the question first is, you just apply common sense. So you got to think of the tenant first. So in an ideal world, yes, you'd have an operator ready to go that you're willing to work with, that you have a history with, and you know your tenant type. And I think then you can go on to what Alex was talking about in terms of technology, automation, all the different little gadgets that you can put in for those specific tenants. If you don't have an operator ready, it doesn't mean you can't do it, but then you wouldn't go and spend a load of money on that because you don't know who's going to be in there. So you'd you'd try and do like a one size fits all approach, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's just about having the connections with the different people. But yeah, it's just applying common sense. You know, who do you want to be in this property? What disabilities or vulnerabilities do this person have? And it's as simple as that, really.
You touched on earlier about room sizes and the kind of criteria that there are. What else in terms of criteria is there that you have to think about when you're starting off with a care home?
Sure. So with us, for example, on Park Roads, the mental health care home that we've just done, it's like,
in Coventry, by the way.
In Coventry, yeah.
Exactly where it is.
Costa del Coventry.
Yeah.
So we discussed with room sizes and having, you know, bright airy rooms, high ceilings and lots of natural light. That's on kind of like the positive sides. Obviously, on the negative side, you also do have to protect these tenants from things that could harm them. So you'd be looking at having low surface temperature radiators so that people can't accidentally scald themselves. You have to look at anti-ligature when it comes to blinds and things like that. We have what are called inclusion showers. So they're basically very clearly marked showers with reds and blue telling you what's hot, what's cold. They have temperature regulators, time regulators. It's all looking
at non-slip flooring.
Non-slip flooring, exactly. It's all looking at the vulnerabilities of the people and what level you need to protect them to. Yeah, exactly that.
But then you can sort of do that midway through because a lot of it's in the finishing. So yeah, hopefully, you know, at the beginning, everyone strips a property out the same. Everyone designs room sizes and en suites or, you know, one bed flats, studios in a similar fashion. So you can get away with putting that finish in a little bit later if you end up working with someone a little bit later on down the line, for sure.
We would always recommend working with your care operator from the start, though. Right. It just saves so much hassle.
It makes
everyone
sense,
listen
though,
to
right?
that point.
Yeah.
Well, in everything we do, I mean, because at the end of the day, you wouldn't be a good investor if you didn't have another exit. So if it didn't work as a care home, you still need to know what to do with it.
Yeah.
If you can't do that, can you flip it off as a HMO? Can you flip the deal? You know, can you turn it into resi? So there are other options that you need to have. And we like to think that you should find your tenant first anyway. You've got to go where the demand is. And you know, if you plan to have to turn it into care, then you want the care operator involved at the beginning because they will tell you what they want. Otherwise, it's like, you know, just doing a property and then putting it out there and just hoping for the best.
Nah, you need a plug and play, effectively, right? And also, isn't property all about just mitigating risk?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that, you know, the basics of all properties? How do I mitigate the risk so I don't lose money?
Exactly that, yeah.
And were the care providers able to give you the kind of advice or options to be like, oh, we should think about doing this, we should think about doing that? Or did you guys kind of have that plan ahead of time? Or again, is it just working collaboratively with them?
Collaboration. So you just sit down with them and go, okay, what do you need?
Yeah.
What do you want? What's a must? What's, if there's budget left over, you can have? And you just sort of, you start working with them like that.
Can I strip it back? Actually, yeah, sure. Before then, because when you buy a property, it doesn't always have the right use class. So before you do anything, you might buy a residential property. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't, for people who are listening maybe, you could buy a property and get a change of use, which I assume you've done with the properties that you've got. You haven't gone out and bought, oh, let's buy an old, you know, battered old care home and let's just, you know, spruce it up and get used.
You've turned it.
So you just go through the process of identifying a property, why you thought that property would work as care, and that what you went through to maybe get the change of use to make it, you know, turn it from hotel, hostel, HMO to care, because I think that's quite
a bloody good town planner. At the end of the day, we can't be experts in everything, so we do have our sort of panel of people that we work with to give us advice on these things. Planning is one, although Alex is getting pretty hot on it himself now. but basically we were HMO experts to begin with, right? This property in particular was a HMO, a rundown HMO. It was a B&B before that. So we know what we're doing with HMOs. We consulted with the town planner. We looked at the plan in the local area, and from the need that's especially come over COVID for, you know, certainly mental health and that sort of crisis, we knew the demand was there, and we knew that we were likely to get the planning through. But you're absolutely right. We couldn't. You still can't ride on that. So we saw this property, it looked great for care, but also we double crossed it and made sure that it would have added up as a HMO.
Right.
Should we not have got the planning through? So it's important to have that. It can't, you know, if you're buying a property and it can only be used as one thing, that's a big risk. Or you're buying it in an area where it doesn't work for anything but one thing, that's a big risk. This is next to the train station, in the middle of town. You can do anything with it. Could have been apartments, could have been a HMO. And we did look at all of those options as a plan B and have them ready. And I think that's the art of just being a good investor. You've got to have multiple exits ready. If you rely on one thing and it doesn't happen, you're going to get stung.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Did you work with the operator through the planning process? Did you identify them first, or did you say, right, let's just get our planning, and then in terms of specifics on the property, we'll then get the operator to design the specifics? At what point did you bring an operator?
I mean, we actually started our relationship with the care provider probably, what, about a year ago? So we were in contact with them before we even had a property. We got put in touch with them by another property investor of ours, and kind of got introduced, and then we were understanding what their needs are, what their requirements for specific properties. We actually showed them another one that the sale fell through on, unfortunately. Okay. So we were gutted about that. But the last thing we wanted to do was go back to them with bad news. So we went out hunting hard for like 2 weeks just to say to them, right, we're really sorry, we've lost that one, but we have got you something that we think is better.
Yeah.
We've worked with them from the absolute very beginning, from day one. They helped us with the planning, going through the planning application. There are a lot of questions as to how the property is going to be used. There's only a certain amount that you need to divulge, but you do need to tell them how many staff are going to be on site and, you know, X, Y, and Z. So they were really helpful through the whole process. I mean, they've got, I think, 11 or 12 properties now. So they've been through this process before. So in that sense, they're extremely helpful, because they're like, you know, we've worked with landlords like you guys before. We obviously want this property, so we're going to do everything we can to make sure that everything goes well and that the planning goes through. There's definitely a lot of hoops to jump through. It's not easy. It's not straightforward, which we were kind of hoping for.
Here's our spec, go and just do it.
Yeah.
The day that you do a property deal that just goes 100% to plan, that's completed it, we'll stop.
especially with planning permission as well. It's never straightforward. It's always a long, arduous process, but it's what makes it all worth it in the end, isn't it?
True.
And sorry, operators. Are most of these private organisations, are they charities?
Is that the next question? On that, Nick.
Oh, sorry, I'm jumping the gun.
Way ahead.
We've got one more in between, but then you can ask that.
I'm pausing.
If we go, we'll move on to question number two, which is, what's the difference between a care home and a nursing home?
You've got
got the answer to that one.
I'll take that one, yeah. So the term nursing home is actually not really used in our sector. I know we've spoken about plenty of different types of care, but elderly isn't really one that we've touched on. It's not something that particularly interests us, not in like a horrible way, but there's plenty of elderly nursing homes out there. Every single new housing estate that's getting built is having some sort of elderly home or assisted living in built.
There's new care villages that are being built, and
they're everywhere. They're everywhere, yeah. And they're big money makers, obviously, because people are doing them. But we look more from the passion side, mm-hmm. from our story of our dads, and we want to help people. So in the sector that we're in, it's split into two, where it's care homes and supported living. So what we did on Park Road is a care home. It's a facility or a site where care is delivered to people, and they have their own rooms, ensuite rooms, and everyone's kind of under one roof. Supported living can be delivered in a person's own home, or in a home that they are provided with, or an apartment that they're provided with. And the level of care is generally lower than it would be in a care home. Care homes are pretty much, always 24/7 care. Mm-hmm. There's always someone on site. Depending on the amount of people, depends on the amount of staff. But supported living is more of a you have more freedom. People will stop in on you depending on what needs you have. Morning, afternoon, night. But actually, interestingly enough, what happens after Park Road? Mm-hmm. So I'll just tell you a little bit about the care that's delivered there. So there's something. It's quite a unique kind of scheme that they do. It's for care leavers, so children that have come through the care system and are just coming out, between about 18 to 25 years old. They obviously are there to support their mental health needs, but they also engage them in something called the Life Skills Program. So this basically teaches them, what it says on the tin, life skills, how to budget, how to cook, how to clean, how to use appliances, stuff we might take for granted.
I still can't do all of that.
Yeah, that's why we've reserved you a room, mate. You'll come out a well-rounded man.
I still need to learn to iron, to be fair.
I hear you.
And is this place, do you provide place in the buildings you develop for that space, these classes or teachings to happen?
Exactly, yeah. So there's an office, there's a communal space, there's activity rooms, that sort of stuff. And they work closely with the job centre as well. So the whole idea is getting them out of that care home, mm-hmm. as quickly as possible and into supported living. And kind of gradually kind of getting them back into society.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. That.
I guess
exactly
what's
that.
Like really good with the kind of homes that you're doing, they've obviously got their own private space, but then they've got this communal space. They avoids isolation or that feeling.
We want to give it the feeling of a home, not an institute.
Yeah.
We want people to really feel like, that living area in there, Nick, is like one you'd put in your own house. It's just like the sofa's a bit bigger, that's all, because it fits like
10 12, people.
Well, I definitely want that in my house then.
That is good. It is good.
And with supported living, would you kind of take the apartment, or they might be like, look, I need some supported living. How can you help or turn the space I've currently got into one that's more accessible for supported living? Kind of what steps where would you start with that?
Well, we do want to go the full hog. So like you say, so in this care home in particular, it's not supported living. This is a care home where 24-hour care is provided. And they have like a HMO-style room. So it'll be a large room with an ensuite, and then the rest of the amenities in the house they have to go out and use as a communal. And then the supported living side. So once these guys come out, the next step would be to have their own like self-contained apartment. So that's where they'd have either a studio or a one-bed. And they will have their own kitchen in their apartment, their own bathroom and their own living area. That's sort of like the next step. And again, you would be working closely with the provider. Well, the ideal scenario is that you'd be working closely with a provider to make that happen.
I guess moving on to question number three, which is how do you operate a care home? Nick, you've got a few questions on this.
Well, I do have
as well.
A question. Yeah, just in terms of most of the operators, the one, whether it's the one you're particularly dealing with right now, are they charities? Are they government funded? Are they private organisations? Is it complete mix? Should you be aiming one for the other?
Complete mix. You can have charities, you can have non-for-profit, you can have private companies. It really depends on how they're set up, I guess, and the avenue they've decided to go down. There's not one. We haven't spoken to any non-profits, but we've spoken to charities and we've spoken to private operators. And they've all the ones that we've spoken to, we've been pretty impressed. I don't think the level of care and the quality differs from a charity to a private business at all.
So then let's just say you've got it all set up, you're now, you know, your operator's in. Does it make a difference who the operator is for a refinance once, you know, if you're looking for long-term debt and you're looking at a yield and you're looking at a return and who the covenant strength is? Because let's face it, that's what the banks are looking for. Yeah. How strong is that covenant? How long is the lease? Actually, another question, we'll go on to the second part, is typically how long are they? Should you look to sign a lease with these guys for? Because obviously the longer the better.
Yeah, this is what I've been dealing with for a long time and been learning pretty quick. So to answer the first question, yes, the covenant strength of the operator is important. So how long have they been in business? What's their accounts like? You know, what's their P&L like? What's their balance sheet like? How many staff have they got? The banks take that all into consideration, because as much as there are good operators, there are a lot of bad ones out there. The last thing you want to be doing is entering into a long lease with an operator who then gets shut down because the care's not great. Or they go bust because the demand drops and they're not on the framework for the council as one of the favoured operators. So that's one thing that we do as a bit of an extra, is we try and get letters from the commissioners from the council to say, yes, this provider is part of our framework and part of the future of the plans for this
council. That's CQC, you'll actually speak to them and find, is that them?
No, that's the council.
What's the CQC?
Care Quality Commission.
Okay. Yeah, so they basically look into, they're essentially Ofsted, but for care. So they come in and kind of score how well the care company are doing.
Is that maybe where you'd start for selecting an operator?
Or potentially, like Max just said, so you've got the CQC, which is the Care Quality Commission, and then you also have a commissioner who is within the council. Confusing, I know.
That's why I got confused.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of people involved.
They basically decide which care companies are going to get which residents, basically, and they basically distribute the residents between particular care homes and particular care companies. So it's important to, it's hard to get hold of the commissioner, but it is important to try and build a relationship with them to understand who is in your plans for the next 20. If we're going to sign a 20-year lease with these people, are you going to continue to be giving them residents? Because if not, you're going to find yourself in sticky water.
Yeah, but
they
can't pay your rent, they can't pay the lease, and they can't pay the rent.
So. Exactly.
So To make matters more confusing as well, that in a care home, the council typically have a lease with the care operator, and then the care operator has a lease with the tenants, and us. That's a care home. But in supported living, there's another party involved. So there's a housing provider, and then there's the registered provider, which is the care company. The council work with the housing provider to sort the tenants out, and then the housing provider put the tenants in, which is then looked after by the care operator. What that does mean is that if the tenant isn't happy, they can move to another property or request another care provider to come in to the property. Mm-hmm. But I'd recommend doing a bit more. We have only just got our heads around it this year, but it's not as simple as just a one way.
Understood.
There's a lot of parties involved. To make the circle complete, and the developer's just one of the pieces of the puzzle. To recap on your first question, which was
how do you operate a care home?
Well, we don't. You could, I guess, but we are not experts at giving care. None of us have a care background, none of us have worked with hospitals, none of us have worked with vulnerable people, so we wouldn't operate it. It's the same as what we do with our HMOs. You know, there's better people that are more suited to actually running the day-to-day in the care home. What we do is we go and visit all of the care operators that we're working with. We go and visit their homes to make sure we're happy with the care that's being provided. Are they clean? Are they well maintained? Did the council give a good recommendation? What's their CQC rating? Because there's different ratings that the CQC give. And then that gives us a feel, and then we're happy to just leave them to operate and poke our heads in now and then. And then in regards to the second question, which was the lease situation, it's a tricky one, because the banks want to see 10-year to 20-year plus leases. So a lot of operators don't want to commit for that long. And also, if you're a landlord, it's difficult to... Do you know if you still want that property rented out in 20 years' time? But typically, Anything below 10 years is going to get revalued more on a bricks and mortar style basis because it's not long enough to be considered as an investment purchase. Mm-hmm. 10 years plus, you can start getting the higher value on the property, which is better for the developer. Because you can refinance at a higher rate and the bank's happy to pay out. But then that also, if you did like a 10-20 year lease of a rubbish operator, then it's not going to make a difference. So it's kind of like the lease length and the operator need to be on par to get that value up to where you need to be.
Well, let's talk about the lease length. And I think one of the reasons people might be sitting there going, but hold on, if I've got 7 years, why is that such a big deal? Well, the difference is that most banks will give you a 5-year loan, mm-hmm. right? At the end of their loan, there's only 2 years left. So ultimately now it's not an investment loan that can be taken out. So they will only give you that term on if the term after their loan is completed is still enough to be taken out by an alternative bank. Otherwise, they have to come, the only other option is to come to someone like us, short-term funder, and hence why you're right, the longer the lease.
Yeah.
Some people might think, but 5-7 years is a really long lease. Well, it is.
In commercial terms.
But in commercial banking terms, it's not, because they're looking at what happens once my loan's finished, can another bank take me out? And the answer is, not really, and that's why it comes back to bricks and mortar value at the end of it.
And again, you want to make sure that you're running your numbers and you're comfortable with the bricks and mortar value anyway, because if you don't get the lease you want or things fall through of the operator, you want to be able to sell it or get out of your short-term funding without any penalty, really. So it's important to that at least the bricks and mortar value stacks up. But to enhance the value and get the best return for yourself and everyone and be able to use it as leverage and go again, the longer leases are more favoured for the higher value. But that's also down to you, the operator, your future, what you want, do you want to sell the property in 5-10 years, then you might want to change strategy. But yeah, that's the sort of basis of it.
We learned very early that in these kinds of deals, it's a care deal, not a property deal. Like, the property is important to a degree, but it is completely secondary to the care side of things. That is really the big one when it comes to refinance value, all of that sort of stuff. We quickly learned that our jobs are quite minimal.
Great. We'll go on to question number 4, which is, what does a care home do? We touched on it earlier, many different types. If we start kind of with what you, Stuart Clinton Property, does, and your care homes, or the ones you build, and then we can kind of go into maybe other ones and what they provide.
Go on.
I'll start, you can finish, we'll share this one.
Ant and deck it.
So specifically in regards to us and what we do, we've set ourselves a goal now of, we want to help house 200 vulnerable people by 2025. Our main focus is on mental health, because it's such a massive conversation, certainly over the last sort of 5 years, and every year it's just getting more and more talked about, and there's never been enough support for it in the past. Back in the day, people with a mental health issue would just get called a nutter and chucked into like an asylum sort of style. And now they're being understood a bit more, and there's different types, and people are very complex. So, we want to service that because of our own, I guess, our own struggles and what we've been through. So our focus is mental health. Saying that, it won't be limited to the rest of the sector. We're not, if we can help, all the people that Alex touched on, learning disabilities, addiction recovery, homelessness, domestic violence, veterans that are struggling, we wouldn't limit it to the rest of the sector, because, the basis of our properties and our model would suit, all across the whole sector. So that's our sort of focus, really, is mental health. But I'll let Alex touch on exactly what a care home does.
Yeah, so I mean, a care home is a place where care and support is delivered. Like I said, for our particular homes, we're looking at the life skills program. So it's getting people back into society, teaching them skills that are going to help them become well-rounded individuals, basically. And then the idea is that they actually don't stay in our care homes for too long. The idea is to get them out as quickly as possible into supported living, where they can continue to be looked after on a smaller degree, and then back into society. to say what a care home does would probably take a while. But yeah, I mean, you can imagine it's supporting people's physical and mental needs and helping them with their vulnerabilities, taking medication. It can involve physiotherapy. You know, on some bigger hot sites, you have hydrotherapy and some amazing, amazing things. Yeah, it's put bluntly, it is literally a place where people get cared for and their needs are met.
Brilliant.
Great.
And just to touch on that, you know, the idea of all care is to help someone improve in their health, be it mental, physical, and the things that they're struggling with, so they can live a happy life on their own. But some people will unfortunately have to stay in care for the rest of their life. So there's also sort of the longer term side of it as well. Where, you know, someone could go into supported living and that's where they're going to stay. But again, it's met on their specific needs.
Is the long-term plan maybe to create a string of facilities that allow people to go from one of yours to another and yeah, they exactly literally that. Cradle to the grave? Hopefully yeah. they come out of it.
Yeah.
But as you say, some people never will. No, so they have to be catered for in some capacity.
Yeah.
So why not cater them in your sort of
yeah.
ecosystem if that's what you want to
call that
so
is the goal,
so
really,
I think
isn't
the,
it?
The next goal is this 11-bedroom care home that we've just done. The dream would be to have the supported living apartments for these guys to go into. That would help, you know, that would certainly make us feel bit more complete that we've done the full mm-hmm. cycle, and you know, seeing these guys improve and transition, we want to see it in front of our eyes. We want to see the work that we're doing. Mm-hmm. That'd be amazing. So yeah, that. But we also want to grow as well, and you know, I see ourselves in the future doing some of the bigger sites, maybe getting some deals with the NHS going, and you know, seeing how far we can press it. So yeah, the more people we can help, the better. The bigger we can get, the better. But still, you know, taking time and detail in the quality and making sure these guys' needs are met, really. But short term, some apartments to for people to come out of the care home and go into would be amazing.
Brilliant. Yeah. Okay. Anything we can do to kind of help the community and society, we're really trying to kind of work with our hearts at the moment. Like Max said before, when you've got a goal that's bigger than yourself, you'll
do that extra bit on everything.
Exactly. Mm-hmm, you've got those really tough, like difficult days and you don't want to get out of bed, when you've got something that's bigger than yourself to work for, it becomes so much easier. So any project that lands on our doorstep that we can help people, we'd consider it, definitely.
Love that.
Great. Final question. Why are care homes needed? I mean, we've obviously touched on that, but I guess is there a shortage? You want to see cradle to grave, you want to do the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously we've touched already on the podcast about like the different types of care and why they're needed and why it's important. But if you look at the bigger picture, now more than ever, the demand's through the roof. I think the demand of people across the country on waiting lists to get into care for their specific needs is through the chart. And, you know, single-handedly as a business, even if we met our goals by 2025 and beyond, we're not even going to be touching the sites. So there's definite demand. There's demand to do it properly. I think the industry's been exploited for a long time. Developers creaming off the top, just absolutely making a killing off it and not really bothering about the tenant. It's just been a way that they can make money that's government backed. So that's going to change, and I can see the industry morphing. But yeah, the demand in the care needed is through the roof.
Has COVID expedited this, you think?
I think so. I think certainly for the mental health side of things, homelessness, I can, you know, if we, the amount of people that are going under and have lost their businesses,
domestic abuse,
it's, you know, all the lockdowns. It's all had an effect.
Everything's kind of, you know, been magnified through COVID.
But also any kids who maybe had slightly difficult situations at home have not been able to escape for months on end, right? Where have they been able to go to get that break from maybe a difficult home life? So that's only going to create probably more problems long term.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, more specifically on mental health, the facts and figures, I mean, I'm sure you guys have all seen it. 1 in 4 people have suffered some kind of mental illness. 1 in 6 people report experiencing a mental illness on any given week. Like, these numbers are just shocking, and right now they're not changing. They're obviously, a lot of people are doing what they can to help, and that is fantastic. But you know, things are difficult, and obviously we're coming out the end of COVID now. But things are going to get harder before they get better. I genuinely believe that.
And are you kind of, for you guys, is the challenge trying to find those buildings that are appropriate, or is that supply out there, or is it, you know, obviously the supply of the people are there, but
the deals are the hardest part at the moment. It's a seller's market, not a buyer's market. So we need some deals.
Extracting value. You've got to extract some value.
So yeah, we've certainly on the resi purchases at the moment, resi's gone through the roof in most of the areas we're looking at. Can't speak for the whole country. But there's definitely a lack of supply in what's on the market for sure. That always changes, that'll next year or the year after it could flip on its head. But right now, everything's in place. Mm-hmm. We've just got to find.
Let's see what happens when stamp duty is back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see.
See what really happens with the market then.
Exactly. No, it'll be interesting to see what happens for sure. But to be honest, any property can be used for care.
Yeah.
A bungalow, one bed house, HMO, care homes, to bigger commercial like villages. But you still got to buy it at the right price and get the job done and get out to make it work.
And that's a difficult thing. I know you touched on it earlier. We're running a business here, and in order for us to reach our goal of housing 200 vulnerable people by 2025, we have to do good business and we have to invest wisely. Mm-hmm. If we rush into something because we're like, we just desperately want to help them, and the deal kind of goes to shit, then we then can't go and help more people
because we've lost the metrics. You can't lose the metrics on a deal. Ultimately, then you can't get that growth.
Exactly. Yeah, in order for us
to take a long time to recover
people,
from that.
Yeah, it only takes one, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Especially from us, who's grown pretty organically. Like, we haven't come from wealthy backgrounds. We haven't started with loads of money. We started with a little bit. And we've had to be very astute of our investments to grow the way that we have. I think for us, we're at a point where we certainly launched the business this year. We pretty much tripled the portfolio this year in a couple of deals. Mm-hmm. And as much as things are going well, like you say, one bad deal can wipe out everything.
A lot of hard work.
So yeah, we have to be smart about that for sure.
So what's next for Stuart Clinton? Can we? So we've got the women's.
Yeah, I was going to say a holiday, but we can't bloody go.
No,
we don't want to take our fingers off the pulse. So
yeah,
like I said, probably the apartments next.
Yep.
We're looking for some supported living apartments.
We've got this smaller women's one coming up that you just said. Yeah, we're waiting for some planning to come through on that, but that shouldn't be too far behind.
And where can our followers find you guys?
They can find us on LinkedIn under either of our names, so Max Rayner, Alex Baker. Most of our updates is done on Instagram, Stuart Clinton Property, at Stuart Clinton Property. LinkedIn and Insta is the main two. And we do have a website as well, which that's www.stuartclintonproperty.co.uk. And that just showcases some of our previous projects, goes into a little bit more depth about ethical investing and why we do what we do, the story in the background. But for day-to-day updates, Instagram and LinkedIn are probably the best for you.
Great. Well, that's been Tabu Care Home Podcast. Thanks for watching. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and see you next time. Bye.
Cheers.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.